Hello and welcome to the Rogue Responder podcast. You might be wondering who we are and what we're about. Rogue Responder is a lifestyle and apparel brand dedicated to all first responders, both active and retired, who have served their communities daily. So what does it mean to be a rogue responder? Being rogue simply means that you've chosen to be free of the expectations put on you from what others think that we should or should not be. We personally strive to pursue our own interests and our goals and dreams every day. Make sure you follow us on Instagram to stay up to date with everything that is happening at rogue_responder. Now that you know the details, let's go rogue. Hello and welcome back to the Rogue Responder podcast. My name is Officer Joe. We have a great episode today for you guys about physical fitness and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with a longtime friend and my initial coach in Jiu-Jitsu. But before we get started, make sure you're following us on Instagram at rogue_responder to stay up to date with everything that's going on with us there. We have an outdoors page, a fitness and martial arts page as well, and you can find information on those specific subsets on the main page. And if you're interested in merchandise, all that will be linked in the Instagram pages, so you guys can go over there. We got shirts, hoodies, hats, everything for you guys. But like I said, we have a special episode today for you guys where I'm able to sit down here with my good friend, first jiu-jitsu coach, Mr. Alan Coble.
How you doing?
Alan is the owner and lead instructor of PA Grapple, located in Altoona, PA, and is the only source of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu in this area. Alan is also the owner of Sports Evolutions, which is host to Sports Performance Training and CrossFit Sports and Evolution, which was a pioneer of CrossFit in Blair County, which I believe was the first box in the area.
Yeah, it was back in 2012. So it's a little over 7 years now that we've had the CrossFit Sports Evolution box.
Wonderful, wonderful. So welcome to the show. Before we
get into it,
if there's anything there I missed, you can introduce yourself to everybody and basically tell us how Sports Evolution came to be and your introduction into CrossFit and Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, no, I think you touched on mainly everything there as far from a business standpoint. I opened Sports Evolution in 2004, so it's been a while. I'd graduated from Indiana University of Pennsylvania in phys ed and sports science. So when I graduated, came out of college, I was fortunate enough to be able to work in the fitness industry and make a go at it working for some other companies, and then eventually just branched off and, you know, started doing my own thing around 2004, 2005. That was the sports side of it, and I had a passion for martial arts. Had always been interested in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, when I was finishing up high school and things like that and getting ready for college. That's when the UFC was just starting to make its presence known. You know, and at that point, there weren't even pay-per-views. It was, you know, recordings that you would get a few months later. But it was obviously very intriguing to me, and with my, you know, passion for fitness and the training that we were doing with the Sports Evolution, it was a logical step for us to open up PA Grappling, which at the time was mainly focused on mixed martial arts stuff. So with that being said, over the years, you know, we still dabble in the mixed martial arts, and we definitely keep in touch with the nuances that go into mixed martial arts, but PA Grappling has mainly evolved into, you know, a strict Gracie Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school.
Okay, that's awesome. So basically, PA Grappling sort of did a sports evolution of itself, going from more of an MMA base initially to...
Yeah, it definitely evolved, you know, as far as that goes. There's a lot that goes into that decision making, but from to be honest, from a business standpoint, it was a common, you know, theme among martial arts school that you needed more of a lineage or a background to help promote the business. And a lot of times in MMA, even though you could have, you know, a lot of tough guys in your gym, it doesn't really promote the lineage or the history of the martial arts. So with that being said, it's tough to attract, you know, a lot of professional individuals to that sport.
Right, sort of giving it, like, legitimacy.
Yes.
Even though, like you said, you might have the world champion guy that was trained by somebody that just knew a little bit but has no actual
Correct.
Connection to
yeah.
the Gracie family or yeah, with any the, other
with the lineage, a lot of times you have that background or that curriculum, so you're able to, you know, pass that information along to individuals. Being just a tough person in general doesn't necessarily make you a good coach and able to, you know, bestow that information to another athlete.
Yeah, 100%. I can definitely see that. So we spoke about how sports evolution and jiu-jitsu within sports evolution with being PA grappling sort of evolved. So you've been coaching for many years and training multiple athletes, and I'm sure it's safe to assume that multiple first responders, police, fire, and EMS, generally speaking, is the first responder crew that I'm looking at. Speaking from a police side, which I have the most experience in, what has your experience been training with? Do we currently still have members here that are in the first responder community?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure we do. I can't say that we're blazing, you know, trails within that community. We definitely have multiple individuals that are not only in police, fire department, EMS, and obviously military individuals. But with that being said, there's quite a high attrition rate with individuals in this sport anyhow, so not even first responders. But I don't really see more of an attrition rate with first responders, but I don't see less of an attrition rate.
So it's about,
The same as, you know, your everyday person who's looking for jiu-jitsu.
Right. So with that in mind, I mean, somebody that's listening, maybe it's an officer that or EMS person or a fireman that's never trained and they don't know why, like, why is there a high attrition rate with jiu-jitsu? Is it because it's so tough, or is it complicated to learn?
I think it's a combination of both. I don't necessarily think it's the physicality part of it. For most part, I feel, you know, first responders are mentally tough. Like, so they have that innately in their brains to, you know, be able to grind through things and to be able to push through things. I definitely feel it's more, a lot of times, the complexity and the brain work that goes into BJJ. So a lot of guys, once they get past the cardio part, if they do make it past that initial, you know, out of breath first class stage, then it becomes like really a learning process. So if individuals aren't, you know, comfortable with that learning curve taking a long time, then that's one of the main things I feel sort of drives people away. Once they realize, well, even if I practice daily, it's still going to take me 9 months to a year and a half till I'm effective at utilizing these strategies. So.
Right. And I mean, I can speak from personal, like some of the things that I think I've seen over the past couple years. And I started the first half of my police career without jiu-jitsu, the first 4 years without it. And then sort of like had an incident in between there where I started to get into martial arts. I did karate, which I'm not going to bash, or we're not going to get in the weeds on that, but ended up finding jiu-jitsu, and the only source of it was over an hour away here in Blair County, so called Allen, and some of the things that, like, myself coming into it that was very different from the training that we had in the academy is we're taught, like, and it's sort of an old school view on it that, hey, you're not going to get taken down. We're going to fight everything that we can. And it's almost the fake it till you make it. Even if you don't have the skills, you give the impression that you have the skills. And I remember even when I was in the academy asking instructors, because UFC is still very popular. It was popular when I went through the academy in 2011. I would argue that it was even more on the rise then than it is now. So I'd ask the instructor, I was like, well, hey, like, there's MMA, wrestling, like, if I get taken down, what are we going to do to mitigate that? And it sort of got brushed over, and then we went over to our pressure point techniques, which we all know don't really work. So I think a lot of times when officers start or come into the sport, there's an ego involved with it, that especially if it's an officer that's been doing it for, say, multiple years, 3-4 years, they're in their career, they have some clout in the job, like they might be a supervisor or on track to be a supervisor, and that you essentially sort of know what you're doing at that point in the law enforcement career. And then stepping into something where somebody 80 to 100 pounds lighter than you, manhandling you, sort of is a little demoralizing, and I think it causes a lot of people to quit. What do you think, Al?
Well, I agree totally 100%, but, you know, like, we could also, I don't think it's particular just to police, fire, EMS. I could see where they have maybe a little bit more introverted personality in the manner that they have some ego-driven things, but a lot of individuals have that. But I've seen guys that have played sports in high school, college, just generally tough guys. And then I've also seen, you know, individuals who aren't, you know, have that athletic background or anything, and they both come in and have stopped. And I've seen guys who both have those backgrounds, athletic backgrounds and, you know, non-athletic backgrounds, and they've made it through. I think overall one of the big things is that it's a mental, you know, you get in your headspace when you're, and I don't want to say UFC glorifies it, but in a manner like, you know, when you see them guys on TV, you see thousands of people cheering for them. You know, they got a huge following. They're tough guys. They represent alpha males in the community. And, you know, we all sort of, as men, rather, you know, if you don't admit it or not, sort of have that in your own body. Like, you're, you know, driven by some type of ego at some point. And it can be very deflating when you're motivated to some extent in that manner, and you get in and, like you said, you know, you're getting on the ground rolling around and you're getting manipulated by somebody, you know, half your size. But in addition to that, like, then there's that physical aspect of it. Like, you hear those sayings, like, you think you're in great shape until you try jiu-jitsu, you know, because it's so demanding. So I think it's a combination of, I don't want to say it's all a mental, you know, thing why you lose people, and I think it's just as much physical. And when both of those things are wearing on you, which jiu-jitsu does that, it makes you physically ready, but it makes you mentally ready, and then can go vice versa. So if you're mentally breaking down, you're physically getting broken down, then that's not always, yeah, and it's not always that fun then. You know, like, I think it was Professor Sauer, Pedro Sauer, and he's the head of our association. But he, you know, I was fortunate enough to get in front of him as a white belt. And that's one of the big things. Like, you get in front of these guys who've done it for years, and they have just such good information. Not necessarily, you know, move-wise, which they have that too, and that's always good information. But just the history and good advice. And he was like, one of the main reasons jiu-jitsu isn't for everybody, you know, his saying was, jiu-jitsu is for anyone, but it's not for everyone. And he's like, that's because in the beginning, it's such an effort for little reward. Mm-hmm. You know, you're having guys hold you down, all you get done doing is tapping during the class. But as you grind through that and you commit to the sport, that sort of flip-flops. It then becomes less and less effort for more and more reward, you know. So those are some of the little intricacies that you don't always hear about when you're just trying to find information on YouTube, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think a lot of it comes down to, as well, like, cops and, I mean, the general public, too, they don't know what they don't know. Like you said, you just see it glorified on TV, or say you put in jiu-jitsu in YouTube, where most people research things, get some video of it. What's going to be some of the first things that pop up? World championship matches, yes, where it's at the highest level. Yeah. And I feel a lot of people have a, I don't even know what the word would be, but they have a skewed view when they come into things, thinking that, oh, in 6 months I can be like these guys, world champions that's trained their whole life.
Yeah, you're right. And it probably, and even from the other perspective too, like when you're looking at that stuff and that's all you see, and you sort of realize that, well, I'm never going to be a world champion, or I'm never going to be competing at that level. But the thing for, you know, first responders is that they don't have to be at a world champion level to be efficient and effective and make themselves safer. You know, they literally have to put the minimal amount of time in that's going to initiate some type of change with their body and their mind to make them effective in jiu-jitsu.
100%. There's a large group online of officers that I'm in contact with. There's actually a page going. It's called Invictus Leo. And they're trying to push like a lot of jiu-jitsu, almost like social media, like brand influencers. Like we're trying to push it to as much people as we can using like the hashtag, like BJJ, make it mandatory. And what some officers are saying, I mean, we have all rank, I'm not involved, but I'm in the community.
Right.
There's black belts down to white belts that have gotten started just because of that. And there's some people who said, like, honestly, if a police officer would train for minimum of 2 years, 2 to 3 years, and get to the level of having a blue belt in the belt system of jiu-jitsu, would be proficient, and you would know the skill. Like, if you're not interested in, like, chasing a belt or
sport side,
just to get to the general knowledge of 2 to 3 years and then continuing to practice that is what a lot of people recommend. What's your take on, do you think jiu-jitsu should be mandatory for police and first responders?
You know, I don't, you know, I obviously I'm coming from a biased opinion, so I'd be like, yes, I think so. I think that's
good. Get him in here.
Yeah, get him in here for sure. I feel like in some sense there has to be some aspect and some knowledge in each individual, whether it be jiu-jitsu or judo or sambo or some type of grappling, close quarter. And give me, like, I know in a life and death situation, you know, I guess you would use whatever force you could. But for the most part, like, it can be, there's a gray area there where you can't, you know, just hop on a suspect's back.
Right.
And like, choke them out.
Slap a rear naked on them or something.
Right. So I think, like, the big thing for what first responders and everybody who's thinking about getting into it and haven't got into it yet is that now if you have a good coach and a good school, everything is more streamlined. So if your main thing is like, all right, I want to, you know, if I get taken down, I want to be able to, you know, have options on how not to get punched in the face or how not to get choked or kneed in the balls when I'm on the ground, then you need to bare minimum, you know, for that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to know how to transition from, a jiu-jitsu armbar to omoplata back to the triangle, back to armbar.
Right.
You know, so you don't necessarily need the whole sports side that goes into winning world championships. You know?
So just basic body awareness.
Yeah, kinesthetic awareness, meaning like if I tell you your foot needs to go there in order to move your body the opposite way, you know, that's the main thing with jiu-jitsu is that kinesthetic body awareness.
Right. No, absolutely. I see that 100%. I think that it's just an analogy that I heard is cops don't want to get taken to the ground. They say, I'll never get taken to the ground. It's the same thing as saying, I'll never drown, but never learning how to swim.
Right.
If you want to learn to not drown, you sort of have to know how to swim to prevent it.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
If you want to learn to survive off, God forbid you get taken to your back, because honestly, in a gym context where we're playing sport jiu-jitsu and I'm relaxed, I have no problem being on my back. I'll play around, let guys work. But in a street situation, if I get taken to my back, I need to know the escapes, transitions to get back onto the top position. Or if I take the person down, I need to know how to maintain that.
Yeah, or even just be able to get away. You know, like stand up to base, like create a little bit of distance and get a little space in between you and your aggressor is huge. It goes a long way. Even if it doesn't end the situation, it still gets you back in a better position to re-engage if you need to
take a tactical retreat.
Yeah.
Like where you're not completely disengaging, but if you're getting the upper hand of me and I can break away from that and get my bearings reassess.
Like, you know, when I see these police videos too, and I never realized, like, I have not looked into it enough to realize like that is a common thing where people don't think they're gonna get taken down. And I think that's a misnomer where people be like, oh, I won't get taken down. to getting taken down and going to the ground, they're different things. Like, so you get taken down, maybe I'm facing you, I get a good angle, I get your legs. When I see these, you know, online videos of, you know, something where it went bad with a police officer and an assailant, they half the time they'll fall over something. You know, they'll trip and fall down a little hill or something like that. Or they'll, yeah, clip themselves on the side of a car or something like that. Or there'll be two officers trying to subdue one guy, and they'll get mixed up and fall over each other. And it's like, that's one of those things at that point where it's not even really anything tactical that got them to the ground. It's just by sheer coincidence of the situation that brought them there.
They ended up there, yeah. And it's a lot of times you see those videos, and you know as well as I do, you watch a video for 10 seconds, like even doing any, like jiu-jitsu is an athletic like endeavor, like you can tell if somebody has athletic balance or coordination.
Right, it doesn't take long to fill that within somebody.
You see this video roll into 10 seconds, you know, couple seconds before they're about to hit the ground, and that's when you start cringing, because most police officers aren't trained, they don't seek out the training on their own, and it's like, oh geez, let's hope that this doesn't go bad for anybody here.
Yeah, and I know you probably aren't turning into like the technical side of the sport and what you would be doing, but something simple in a lot of those situations, and you'll hear the decent guys with the good information, but just lowering your level. You know, so when somebody is getting close to you and where it becomes a position to engage, literally just getting your hips lowered to the ground is something very simple. It doesn't take a super athletic person to do that. Lowers your center of gravity, gives you a better base of support, and therefore puts you in a better position. You know, and that's not years of training. You know, that's
something
couple,
you can easily
couple
do.
Hours in the gym, you know.
Right. So, I mean, it'd be sort of something similar to if I'm standing on stilts and you go to push me versus me standing on the ground.
Yeah.
I'm going to be inherently more stable if I'm on the ground versus at an elevated level.
Yeah, that's the same way your hips work. The lower your hips get towards the ground, the better your center of gravity is going to be.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's transition. So I started here with you guys at PA Grappling in May 2015.
Yeah.
So you've seen me literally from day one. Week one, hour one, minute one, until up to a month or two ago when I actually left the gym to go to a gym that's closer to my house due to travel concerns. I mean, I was traveling over 100 miles round trip, and it was an hour each way, so it wasn't anything that, like, we had this big falling out, or it was just basically a proximity thing. So I think it'd be cool to recall some of the first classes and go over, like, my progression so people can hear, like, I wasn't very good. I started out like everybody else, flailing around, not knowing what I was doing.
Yeah, definitely for sure. Like, you have, obviously, it's your podcast, so I'm going to boost you up a little bit. You know, so. I see the wink, wink.
Or we'll edit that right off.
But, yeah, nah, like, everybody struggles with it. I think one of the things for you, a saving grace, and not just you, and this happens to be, and I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but, you know, some type of fitness, athletic background sure goes a long way. And it doesn't need to be a requirement for an individual, but in your case, it helped facilitate your jiu-jitsu abilities because you came from that background. Now, you were dealing with some, you know, physical attributes that you needed to work on. You know, maybe cut down a little bit on your weight and helped you move a little bit better and things like that. So at that point, there were some limitations. But from a mechanical or kinesthetic awareness point, you had some of that background training. So it transitioned fairly well.
Right. No, and 100%. Like prior to coming, I mean, I wasn't a great athlete, but I played sports my whole life growing up. Baseball, football, soccer.
Which all require balance, right?
The whole gambit, yes, 100%. And then prior to that, I sort of, like, after high school, pre-getting into the police academy, got really into powerlifting and strongman. So I had a much larger frame when I started. I was about 80 to 95 pounds heavier than I currently sit. I was around 270 when I first started. And when I came in, I thought, oh, I'm this big, strong guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to be able to – I knew that – from watching like UFC and stuff, like I'm not going to be able to beat everybody, but I feel like I'll be at least able to hold my own. That was not the case.
Yeah.
I remember being choked out about 13 times by an older gentleman in our academy who's in his 60s.
And he's still around choking people.
Yeah, I got choked about 13 times in a 3-minute roll.
Yeah, well, that's one of those things. And that goes back to our points we were talking about, you know, a little bit earlier. That's tough to stomach. You know, so not a lot of people are good with that side of things, but at the same time, that also should be like a light bulb. Being right. Like, you know, this guy who's 60 and literally 138 pounds is able to
manhandle me at 280.
Right. There's something missing in my training that I should start to dabble in.
Right. You know? Oh, no. 100%. No, it's funny to look back, like, because I never thought, like, and I'm still not at a level that I want to be. But looking back, when I started, I never thought I'd be at the level I am now.
Yeah, now it's fun.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not the best, I'm not the worst, I can work positions. But when I first started, I'm like, holy shit, I'm never going to learn this. And I know it's probably not anything exclusive to law enforcement, but I feel like people sort of tend to go in one and two directions. And I've seen multiple people come and go, but you have more interaction with them with being the owner and the coach. But it sort of seems like it's you have that aha moment, and you can go one of two directions. I need to learn this wizardry shit.
Or it's going to be too much.
Or that was so demoralizing, I'm going to pretend that never happened and never step foot back in there.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the big things, and like, I'm not, you know, a high-level coral belt or black belt or anything like that, but just from reading martial arts and being passionate about it, one of the big things that has been for me, and I try to tell my students, it's about decision making. You know, so being in the moment, being able to keep your mind and your wits about you in the moment is one of the biggest things that you're going to learn in jiu-jitsu, and one of the biggest things that you're going to be able to utilize in a situation that requires you defending yourself against somebody who's being overly aggressive. You know, so if you've never been in a fight or an altercation, one of the first things that happens is like a cloud of dust. So even if it lasted 10 seconds, you know, somebody could ask you, do you remember what happened? And a lot of times, you know, that first 10 seconds, it's like, I don't really recall. And that's the big thing with jiu-jitsu, by practicing it, playing it, allowing yourself to be in positions that suck, you know, it gives you the benefit to sort of allow yourself to make good decisions in the heat of the moment, you know. That's your enlightening part of jiu-jitsu, good decision-making skills.
Right, it's being comfortable in an uncomfortable situation.
Yeah.
Getting you that, we call, and it's not a term exclusive to us, but the military coined this term, I believe, or popularized it anyway, is stress inoculation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To where if you're in these horrible situations, say you're at a 12 on the freakout scale, and 2 weeks go by, maybe I drop down to an 11. I might sit there for a month, 2 months, whatever, right, and then it generally starts popping down to like maybe 2-3 years down the road. That same situation where I would have been at a 13 or above, now I'm at a 4.
Yeah.
Where I'm not saying it's not going to be stressful, but I can actually process, okay, there's a large group of people gathering around me, they're getting close.
Right.
Okay, where's his hand position relative to my tool belt?
Yeah.
And be able to sort of make those, like you said, those tactical decisions in the moment.
Yeah.
Which are so important, and that'll actually segue something great. So as you can probably recall, or I'll bring it up now and you can recall, when I had an incident in early 2016, I'd been training with you for about 10 to 12 months, not even that long of a time. I had an incident where I was able to use jiu-jitsu to defend myself and defend the suspect, essentially. He was much larger than me, and we can get into the details of this later. Division I athlete, much bigger, much more athletic. Do you remember me telling you about basically the situation, and what was your thoughts? Like, here I was, somebody just came in less than a year ago and was able to, after I described it, I actually had video and showed you the video, and how, like, I don't know. I think, like, from a coaching perspective, I think that would be, like, one of the greatest
moments. It is a good feeling, you know, because of the manner that you handled yourself in that situation, in a situation that could have escalated even more so than it did for no reason. It could have got even worse. But the ability to actually, you know, gather your wits about you, because you're sort of in a bad place to begin with. That didn't necessarily start out with the position that you probably would have chose for it to be in. But you could sort of, and you can see in the video too, like sort of getting your wits about you, you know, sort of processing the information and then having a game plan to react. So that's one of those huge things, even though it wasn't 2, 3, 4 years of activity or 2, 3, 4 years of practice in the sport, you still had a plan of action that you were able to implement just because you were consistently training at that point.
Right, yeah, I was coming. I mean, I would drive at least 2 to 3 days a week to come train, and I thought, you know, it's, yeah, I could go do something else. I could go back to
the gym. I think for you, though, probably, too, at that point, is like, man, that's, you know, that's why I can't get away from this stuff. You know, it has to be part of it.
Exactly. Like, pretty much, I mean, I was... I have a very highly addictive personality, so if I find something that I like, I go down the effing rabbit hole, I research it. I'm like, for example, like high brand, like I'll order top of the line shit because, hey, it sort of forces me, like, okay, I'm making an investment into this.
Right.
But even on a, I mean, it is a financial investment, but just a mental investment into myself, that it's worth it to myself, it's worth it to my family, it's worth it to people that I, basically, I took an oath to be able to protect and serve.
Yeah.
How can I protect others if I can't protect myself?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of officers are lacking.
Yeah, it's a fine line, though, too. Like, you know, we try to encourage these guys to come in. But at the same time, you don't want to put it on them like, you know, you're less of an individual or less of a, you know, person if you don't do that. It's really not even saying that as much as it is a focus on, you know, making that commitment to yourself and just the betterment of yourself. You know?
Right, right. And I mean, some of the big things, like I said, I mean, you can comment on this just so it's not me tooting my own horn here. But like, what were the physical changes, the attitude and confidence, like, that you noticed, and not even just with me, but say somebody that comes in that is slightly overweight or maybe introverted, or what are some of the transformations you've seen?
Well, obviously you have all the physical, you know, transformations that you can make with any type of fitness. They'll be made with jiu-jitsu. If you stick with jiu-jitsu, maybe with the exception of Big Al, I hope Big Al don't listen to this podcast, but so if you stick with jiu-jitsu, you're gonna lose weight, you're gonna be more mobile, you're gonna get leaner body mass. So that's what we would call a side benefit, not even a side effect, a side benefit of the sport. But mentally, once again, it goes back to that mental enlightenment. And you'll see, you know, the individual as they start to get into the sport, and now they're able to hit some sweeps and they're able to hold some positions. Their whole approach to the sport changes, and that's from a mental standpoint. Like, they're mentally enlightened. They're learning how to make good decisions, and it goes back to that whole, you know, aspect of being in the heat of the moment and being able to play that game of chess. I think when people play, like, jiu-jitsu is like chess, so it's all about moves. No, it is about moves, but it's about the decision-making process that leads to those moves. And that's the same with the sport.
Yeah, and that translates so good into police work. Like,
well, yeah, you could have a ton of moves, and the same with police. Like, you could have a ton of options, you know, but if you can't have the thought process
to plan out where you want to go or how you're going to handle that situation.
And that's probably why, and I'm not saying this happens a lot or it's right or it's wrong, you know, and I can say specific points in my head, but I'm sure there are situations where somebody has got shot a little quicker than what they probably should have been shot.
100%.
Due to the fact that poor decision-making skills in the fight or flight.
Yeah, and 100%. It's a tragedy that it happens, and it is officer's decision that made that happen, but it's ultimately departments that are failing the officers to give them training, or the old saying is you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Even giving knowledge of, hey, this is the training that's available. It would be beneficial for you. Something that I currently, this will be the first time I'm bringing it up here or anywhere, that I actually want to work with is actually rally some state legislators or congressmen. I'd like to essentially get it to the point where if I come to Alan and say, hey, I'm a first responder, can I have like an itemized bill for every month that I was here for training? I think that jiu-jitsu and CrossFit or Olympic weightlifting or whatever type of physical fitness should be able to be wrote off as a tax break for officers.
It's getting a little closer for at least like gyms, right? Like, so there's
some health, what's the health insurance providers will actually pay your gym memberships.
Yeah. So I think to some extent, like I know we have a couple COs that we train. Now they are, for their gym membership, the fitness side of things
is covered.
It's covered, but not, you know, not to the martial arts training or the defensive training or anything like that.
With our job, I mean, 99% of physical force that we have to use is hands-on. So why wouldn't it be put as at a higher level than what it is? So I think, same as we get a tax write-off, if I need to buy myself a pair of new boots for my job, I can turn that off for a tax break because it's required equipment and training for the job.
Yes.
Equipment, or training, rather. Jiu-jitsu should be just as needed, in my personal opinion, as having a duty belt, as having a coat, as having a uniform. And it's something that I'd like to work on, and I'll definitely keep you guys in the loop as I try to work on that. I got about 9,000 irons in the fire. I like to stay busy, but let's move on, sort of shift gears here. Basically, we're going to switch over to the fitness side, which I just got into a lot more. I sort of took a step away from physical fitness training when I started jiu-jitsu because I sort of fell into the trap. Like I said, I was 270 to 280, and I was relying too much on my strength and my physicality. Basically, using my strength to compensate for my shitty technique, and I essentially wanted to get better at the sports side of jiu-jitsu, so I've tried to be more technical, start cleaning up my diet, and actually what I got into last month is CrossFit, which Alan had here for years, and I always look and say, those guys are out of their effing mind, and I thought it was something that I couldn't do, and now I'm part of this cult, as a lot of people call it.
That's one of those things with the CrossFit. I think there's too much in the fitness community of diversity, not as far as like physical programming, but people's approach to it. So, you know, CrossFitters don't like bodybuilders. Bodybuilders don't like powerlifters. Powerlifters don't like CrossFitters. So all that stuff is
a lot of tribalism.
Yeah, you know, so I sort of think that's what makes people start to, you know, brand things like you're part of a gang or a cult or whatever they want to call it. But the bottom line is that, you know, I had a smart guy tell me a long time ago, like, you know, the fitness is like a bicycle tire, you know, and we're all on the outside of the tire, and in the center is the hub. Mm-hmm. And then there's all those spokes that lead to fitness, which is the hub in the center. Yeah. You know, so it doesn't
matter.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, so
multiple pathways to the same.
Yeah,
same
to achieve that goal, you know, and that's one of those things. Like, I don't like to get caught up in. I like doing the CrossFit. I like doing the jiu-jitsu. I like Olympic lifts. I like strongman stuff. So I think everything has its right place if it's set up in the proper program. You know, so I wouldn't come out and be like, even though I own a CrossFit box and I want to, you know, I want everybody that's listening to this to come to my box, I don't believe it's the means to an end or the one and only means to an end.
Right, 100%. Like I said, I literally just started last month, so I did my on-ramp classes, and I'm going to get my CrossFit coach and CrossFit Excursion to come on the podcast, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But being in it a month, I sort of see CrossFit. I heard somebody else coin this term, and I'm stealing it as my own now. They look at CrossFit They said that it revolutionized and has revolutionized fitness the same way that the UFC and mixed martial arts revolutionized martial arts. Basically, the whole idea, from what I've gathered, and you can speak more to this, that the main objective of CrossFit is to take what works, to take what is effective, and to continue to do that in as many varied ways and routine. And
that is their, they do plug that. That's how one of the ways that CrossFit brands it. It's constantly varied, high intensity functional movements. Mm-hmm. So basically what that means is that's preparing you for the unknown. So when you're CrossFitting, or if you went to a CrossFit seminar, or if you have a good CrossFit coach, that's what they're explaining to you. They're constantly varying your workouts in order to prepare you for situations that you might not know are going to pop up, which would be what would translate well for first responder. You know,
100%, because it's always the unknown with us.
Yeah, and a lot of that too is like, so you don't know if you're going to be running 100 yards to chase somebody down, all right, you know, which is going to require some endurance and some physical cardio capacity. You don't know if it's going to be a situation where you're having to try to subdue somebody, where it might require a little bit more muscular strength, muscular endurance, and that also requires cardio capacity. So I think that's the good fit for CrossFit as far as a relationship to police, fire department, ES,
right.
EMS.
So it's just, it's sort of, it's, again, like the terms that we like to use in law enforcement, especially being a patrol, we sort of coin ourselves as like generalists, like master of none. Like, we don't have a specialized area, but we sort of know a little bit of traffic laws. We know the criminal laws.
Yeah.
We know this, that. I might have a specialty, like in my department, people will refer to me when it comes to anything martial arts because they know, okay, he's not the authority, but he knows a lot about it. And that's sort of what we like to...
Yeah, the CrossFit side of it, like if you actually went through the seminar, you know, one of the things you would touch on is GPP, which is general physical preparedness. So it alludes to that same thing that you were just talking about. You know, it's a general overview. Now, another big term that they have in CrossFit is what they call virtuosity. So you're working all these different aspects of fitness. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, you're the top dog in the gym for those aspects of fitness, but you're working towards bettering yourself in a safe
environment.
Yeah, in an efficient manner.
So, and another thing I think a lot of people see is the Reebok CrossFit Games, which I think next year won't be the Reebok CrossFit Games, it's just going to be the CrossFit Games, but they see that on TV and they see somebody like Rich Froning or Matt Frazier or these guys with 18 packs and 25-inch arms and doing these crazy movements. Like, I know a lot of people out there aren't happy with the way they look. They'd like to make some improvements. Like, do you have to be in physical shape before you start CrossFit?
No, that's like, weird. When people say that about jiu-jitsu too, the same thing. Like, oh, I'll do that once I get in shape. But the problem is that they're never going to get in shape, you know?
Yeah.
I think the thing with CrossFit is that you see these, you know, freakish athletes. They're super ripped, look amazing with, you know, their muscles and the leanness. And you see them working out. So it's that same misconception in your mind that you're going to be expected to try to work in some manner that resembles that, even though that's farthest from the anything possible that you're going to be able to do.
Right.
So I think the big thing with CrossFit, as long as you find a good box and a decent coach, they're going to help you sort of navigate that initially and make you realize that you don't need to be doing what Joe's doing. Mm-hmm. You can be doing the same movements, but the intensity can obviously vary. You know, and I think that's one of the big things with CrossFit that allows multiple individuals from all different backgrounds and sizes to be able to do that effectively is the ability to scale and vary the exercises.
So when you say scale, that means like if I come in and I can't do a muscle up where I pull myself from the floor, jump up, grab rings, and extend myself up if I can't do that, so you're telling me there's a movement or a variation that gives me...
Or a way to assist that. Okay. So instead of you, say you can't do pull-ups, all right? Well, you struggle with pull-ups. You know, you come in, we see female ladies all the time, and even guys, and the first thing, you know, I want to do CrossFit, but I can't do pull-ups. That comes up a lot. Well, there's ultimately multiple ways to try and develop those muscles, even though you're not doing a pull-up. Maybe like a ring row or a band row or some type of arm extension with a band and a pipe. So there's multiple things that you could do to try to facilitate that movement or the ability to do that movement that doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing that movement.
Right. Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just getting started on the CrossFit journey, man, and I wish I would have started it sooner. That was some fears that I had starting out. Even though I did jiu-jitsu and was in pretty decent shape, it was the same thing. I never really looked into it and didn't know that, like, there were scaling options. I knew prior to starting I couldn't do a pull-up. I couldn't do jump, like, I couldn't jump rope. I couldn't do the Olympic lifting that I saw, and, like, some of these crazy, like, the burpees, and, like, I saw the people moving, and I'm like, oh, my God, like, I could never do that.
Yeah.
And it's so far from the truth, because there's a variation for everything.
There is a variation, too, and I'm a CrossFit guy, you know, as far as I opened the box, so I believe to some extent that what they do really supplements, you know, fitness. But with that also being said is that they've just really done a great job of branding things that have already existed.
Right.
You know, so when people were like, oh, that's a CrossFit exercise, and you're like, and you don't want to be like stepping on people's toes and being all nitpicky and be like, well, technically that is a movement that has been around since 1908.
From gymnastics or
something. From gymnastics, you know. And so that's one of those things, like, I'll just sort of, you know, slightly steer around that. Be like, well, yeah, it is a CrossFit movement, but technically, it's come from a movement that we've derived in health and fitness over the years that is, you know, something that can be done by you, by me, by a 45-year-old woman, by a 20-year-old athlete.
By anyone.
Yeah, it's about the movement side of it. So if you can move efficiently, it doesn't really matter if you're doing jiu-jitsu or if you're doing CrossFit. Understanding your body's abilities and the movement is the main thing that, you know, is going to help facilitate health and fitness.
That's so awesome. And I think, I'm sure you, not even just from a marketing or branding aspect, because you own both and want more people in, obviously, but how do you feel? I think it supplements jiu-jitsu, strength and conditioning by doing CrossFit, and like, jiu-jitsu helps you with CrossFit. I feel like it's like one of the, it's like a weird perfect blend.
You know, and that's why people, like, just are silly sometimes. Like, so there's a meme out there going around, and one of my purple belts sent it to me, and he was, you know, stepping on my toes. That was, you know, his way of doing it, and just ragging on each other, nothing personal. But it was like a guy in a triangle or something like that that said, I'm not into CrossFit. Let me see how burpee gets you out of the triangle. When it's like... It's just silliness thought process. No one ever said that CrossFit is going to help your jiu-jitsu in the manner that it's going to help you apply moves more effectively. But as far as, you know, developing mobility, flexibility, muscular strength, muscular endurance, cardio capacity, power endurance, any of those things, like, CrossFit definitely has 100% a place in a jiu-jitsu guy's program. Now, it doesn't have to be the CrossFit style.
Right.
It could be other movements, but, you know, it's that same thing. To say that it doesn't have an effectiveness in any sport, it's not sport specific. That's one of the big things.
Right.
I'm not saying that, but it does have a supplement to sports.
Everything, going back to just being generally prepared.
Generally physically prepared.
Right.
You know?
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you sitting down and talking to me here. People are going to listen to this. Before we go, man, where can everybody find you online?
Yeah, if you're online, it's all at Facebook and Instagram. It's at Leading Athletes. So that's at Leading Athletes. You can find us there. We have a Facebook page, IG page, fairly decent followings on both. The business is Sports Evolution and PA Grappling. You can find all of our information to Sports Evolution at sportsevolution.net and all of our information to PA Grappling at pagrappling.com. Our CrossFit information is on the Sports Evolution page, and we're located centrally here in PA in Altoona, so it's an easy trek if you feel like stopping out.
And I'll tell you guys what, I'm going to link all of that information in the show notes so that you guys can find it there. Please make sure you're following Alan. Please make sure you're following Leading Athletes, Sports Evolution, everywhere, so you can stay up to date. Even just, he puts out some awesome content. I follow there, and you guys should too. And before we go, I'd like to also throw out a little offer to you guys. If anybody mentions this podcast to Alan when they want to come and try out jiu-jitsu, they'll get a free week trial of jiu-jitsu.
CrossFit too. Throw in CrossFit too, man.
Yeah, do CrossFit. Cool. Yeah, that works. We'll do that. And I'll tell you what, if you're not satisfied with the results that you get, you can tell somebody else because I don't know either.
Take it up with Joe.
So, but no, honestly, yes. All jokes aside, I can almost guarantee you that if you train with these guys here, man, you're going to fall in love with it like I did. And it's not even from a coaching side or a performance side. It's just a personal level, man. Like, I consider Alan one of my best friends, and we still stay in touch. Like, yep. I said, we've been buddies now for a couple
years. We would have
been
rolling today, but somebody got buggered up.
Yeah, busted my finger, so I'm on the IR. But, all right, guys, that's where we're going to end it for today. Stay tuned to the next one, guys. Hey, everybody. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Rogue Responder podcast. Just a little bit of cleanup before we get out of here officially. I'd like to state that all opinions made on the show are that of the participants, hosts, and or guests. They do not represent any agency that anybody works for in any capacity, factual or fictional, in any way, shape, or form. Now that that's out of the way, if any of you guys out there are interested in sponsoring the show or pointing us in the direction of a sponsor, slide into the DMs, let us know, and we'll get back to you. All right, guys, thanks for the support.